Welcome to the Cheltenham School Board Meeting Podcast, online at www.cheltenhamlocal.org or at www.cheltenham.fm.
Cheltenham School Podcast, Finance Committee Meeting, complete recording, February 3, 2015.
It's 8:15, so let's go ahead and get this financial affairs meeting started. I guess we'll go to my left with the roll call, please.
Mary Russell. Stacey Lyons.
Julie
Hewitt.
Stephanie Gray.
And Brian Malloy. Now can I get a motion to approve last month's minutes meeting for the minutes last month?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you. What we have tonight are three very important presentations. The first will be the audit from our 2013-2014 budget. Next, Mr. Michaels will present some of the preliminary budget figures for 2015-2016. And finally, we'll have a budget status update from Ms. Michaels for this school year, 2014-2015. So without further ado, I believe it's the Malley Corporation. Okay. They will do the presentation for our audit from the previous school year. So the table is yours.
Thank you. My name is Ed Farner. I'm a partner with the firm, and Amanda Berard is the manager on the assignment. We have a couple handouts. One is just an overview of the audit process itself, and the second handout, I'll just cover briefly once we at the end of it. So Amanda's going to start with the short one. It's an audit presentation, and we'll walk through that too.
Okay. And just to make sure, what we want to do is get through the whole process first and come back and ask questions. Okay? Thank you.
The first page just goes over the agenda for our presentation. We're going to talk a little bit about the audit scope and timing. Ed's going to review some of the numbers on the summarized financial report. We'll talk about our required communications and also some perspective issues. So for the audit scope and timing, the first thing we do is obtain a trial balance and the supporting account analysis. We received that information very timely and performed our analysis. We review the internal control system. We're looking to make sure your procedures are adequate and also that they are operating as they were designed to be operating. Cash and investments, our concentration there is looking at the bank reconciliations, the investments, and also to make sure your deposits are covered under the Act 72 collateral requirements. For your capital assets, we concentrate on vouching your material additions for the year, so your large construction projects, we're looking at the corresponding invoices. We also review the depreciation expense calculations. In the accounts payable area, we concentrate on a search for unrecorded liabilities. What we're looking for there is to make sure your expenses are recorded in the proper period. In other words, if something was paid in July, we want to see whether that relates to June and bring it back to the previous year or whether it's recorded properly in July. Debt, we test via confirmations, and same for revenues. Expenses, we do something called a pivot table. This is a form of what we call disaggregated analysis. We're able to look at accounts in more detail. What we're looking at is fluctuations on a monthly basis rather than just annually, for example. We also have software that allows us to perform some additional procedures that you may not see in other audits. We obtain your general ledger, and it allows us to perform a lot of different analysis. One thing we do is look at payroll. We're looking at W-2 compensation from one year to the next, and also lining up some of the higher compensated individuals to their job descriptions to make sure that there's nothing out of line there. Subsequent disbursements is another area we use our software, and we also perform a lot of the revenue and expense analysis. Our journal entry testing is performed that way. One of the additional tests we ran this year was a review for duplicate direct deposit accounts. This is something that's going to detect a possible fictitious employee. So we've all heard about the recent frauds, and this is one audit procedure we can perform that could potentially find something similar to that. Benford's Law, I think we've presented this in prior years as well. There should be a chart along the back side. Mine's black and white, I think yours is a nice pretty color. Benford's Law, It basically says the first digit of transactions should have a certain distribution. That distribution is in the form of a curve. So we lay out your general ledger transactions compared to this expectation. And as you can see from the chart, the bars are your actual transactions for the year. You are right in line pretty much with the expectations there. And this procedure, again, it's somewhat designed to find fraud. One of the things it finds is sometimes there's a high instance in, let's say, the fours. If your bid threshold's $50,000 and somebody's putting through a bunch of payments for $49,000, something like that would pop up in here. So we use that as a fraud procedure as well.
The next page after that is a summary of 2 years financial statements. The typical government financial statement only shows 1 year of data, so the 2 year will give you some trends on what happened between 14 and 13. The first section deals with the government-wide financial statements. Those are the four full financials where you capitalize your fixed assets, you record depreciation expense, bonds are recorded as liabilities, so it's almost like a for-profit balance sheet. So just walking through some of the numbers there, cash and investment account was up from the prior year. Taxes receivables were fairly comparable, same with the due to other governments. The prepaid item, the increase there, dealt with funding on the self-insured medical. Capital assets went up significantly from 91.3 million up to almost 99 million. Their theory, again, is we're depreciating those assets over their useful life. So for Cheltenham, you've got about $140 million of gross fixed asset costs, and accumulated depreciation is about $40 million. So again, if the theory is we're depreciating those over their useful life, it's showing that overall you've got about two-thirds life left in the fixed assets of the district, which is a positive trend. The accounts payable number is fairly comparable. The debt did go up in 14. The OPEB obligation or asset. The OPEB is the other post-employment benefit. So basically you're offering retirees medical coverage, and actuary actually does a calculation on when they're anticipating the employees will retire, what the medical cost would be. So you're actually recording expense each year as the employees earn that. You're one of the few districts that we have that actually has an asset that you put money away ahead of time to start building for that. That leaves you down to net position or net equity of the school district is $38 million. That's up about $4.4 million. Your total liabilities here are about $100 million. Net equity is about $40 million. So that's a very favorable debt to equity ratio for government and for school districts. The bottom section is the revenue and expenses. The property tax revenue went up along with the EIT and grants. And the bottom section there, most of the increases there dealt with wage increases and also PEASERs. Over the last 3 years, your PEASERs contributions actually more than doubled. So that leaves, on a 404 basis, a $4.4 million surplus versus a $10.6 million in 13. If you flip to the next page, the second set of financial statements deal with the fund financial statements, and that's how you keep your books, that's how you do your budgeting. The 404 financial is just a once-a-year conversion. So at the end of 14, your general fund balance in total was at $12.8 million, which was up about $900,000 from the prior year. And the unassigned piece of that went from 3.3 up to 5.2. And you did have to transfer to the capital reserve, which brought that net surplus down to the 893 number. The food service had a small loss. And we can get into the full financials if you have questions or just go over where we're at this point. The other document that I left with you is once we're done the school district audits, we're up to 26 school district clients at this point, and we've summarized the financial information from other districts just to give you some idea of what fund balances look like, reserve fund balances. We don't identify who is who, even though it's public information. So in your case, Cheltenham's number 20 in this book. And again, that's just more for data. It's not scientific. But
what page is that?
Now, your number 20, if you look at the column on the districts, we've got 22 schools.
The chart.
I'm sorry.
Is that in here?
That's all data, the financials, they highlight. Turn the page.
It's by school districts. And there's three sets of data. The government-wide.
Very top, 1, 2, 3, 4, plus the
number 20. And we're number 20.
And the general fund, and then it's also food service. Again, it's to give you some comparative information. I think you'll see that you've got a very solid balance sheet, very solid fund balance, and you can look at the other ones in that ball scheme. That's a quick run through of the numbers. There's one other issue we wanted to bring up, and we've talked about it in the past. It's an expected issue. It affects the June 30, 2015 financial, and that's the unfunded pension liability. Keyser's total unfunded liability is about $24 billion, and they finished their last June 30 audit. They're now in the process of allocating that more like $1 billion deficit out to all the school districts. So you're going to report that liability on your government-wide balance sheet next year. Keyser's is estimating that it's going to be about three times your wage number. So if your wages were $50 million, the unfunded liabilities are going to be about $150 million. And that liability is going to go onto your balance sheet next year. From what we can tell, I don't see any school district that's going to wind up with positive equity once they broke that liability. So you're in the same boat with the rest of the schools. But it's a massive liability, and you can see that from your contributions that you've done over the last few years. Again, it's doubled in the last 3 years. So you'll see a totally different balance sheet when we go through this process next year on the government-wide. We've talked to bond rating agencies. They don't really know how they're going to address it yet because everybody's in the same. So my guess is that they're take that liability and carve it out and just see what your true operations look like. Is that something you can't control? Pfizer will send you a letter saying, this is your unfunded liability, this is what you're going to book next June.
School district.
The taxes receivable, I assume this is a net number, assuming some level of aging as well as some assumption.
We actually confirmed the lien taxes with the county.
Okay.
Showing as far as real estate taxes.
Do we have an assumption of uncollectibles or anything like that, or do we largely go on the assumption that eventually
the fact that you ultimately lien the property and collect it, we feel comfortable with the pledge, and it's more timing.
Sure. And is there good sense of aging trends? Are we getting better?
The number in relation to your total is low compared to most of our districts, and there wasn't much increase from year to year. So mm-hmm. the incremental piece has not been growing. So your overall collection rate is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any other board questions? Oh, I have one question on the different school district comparisons. Are those numbers significant, like we're 20th, or just this
no.
is we just
went
just want to make sure.
It's just number 20.
We're just number 20.
We shuffle them.
It's just shuffle them up, random order.
Based on when we're done with the audit.
Just wanted to double check.
I just wanted to confirm something that I think I'm hearing you saying. That when the bond rating companies look at school districts, you think because it's such a massive overall, everybody's in the same boat situation, they're going to back Pfizer's out and look at what everything.
That would be my guess. I think they always seem to focus on the general fund. If you have a stable general fund, are you eating into it each year to balance that street budget? So that's something that you can control and you budget for, and it actually has a direct impact on the final numbers versus the government-wide, which has depreciation expense, which is an estimate of the useful life, and it's going to have the Pfizer's liability on it. And again, you're not different from many other schools, and unfortunately, even the townships, typically with police contracts, we're going to see a significant unfunded liability too. Because they're very individual, relatively small taxing increases.
Imagine what this also ends up being. So many states actually look better.
Besides that, the state has its own $20 billion
right.
unfunded liability on their end. So, but you're right, they're trying to push their piece of the school down to the school.
Of course, right.
So everyone will generally work under the assumption that they already knew it was there.
And if I go to school, just go chapter 11.
Right. But the general fund is your day-to-day operation and your current expenses and revenue. So.
Ms. Haywood.
Is the comparative data, that's just for Montgomery County schools?
No. There's a list in the front.
Okay.
We did a narrative of some of the trends.
Okay. Abington, Centennial.
That's in alphabetical order. That's why you can't line up a district with an
algorithm. Give us the
names. You can figure it out if you really want to.
That's okay. That's okay. Thank you.
We'll figure that out.
I had another question. On the previous audit, the last year's audit, you had some recommendations how we should improve our controls on certain areas. I believe it was on automobile coverage and so forth. I didn't know if there were any suggestions you had from this audit as far as any sort of things, any controls that we should do better on. So it was like a two-page report.
I think we've seen constant improvement. When we first came here, we were probably in double digits with findings, and they've been going down significantly each year. So we have nothing new to report, and a number of things in last year's report has been addressed.
Okay.
We kept one for the timeliness of deposits at the high school. That's the one.
That's one area.
That's a repeat finding from last year. So
yeah, I remember that was on last year. Okay. I was just wondering because I remember reading that from last year.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great
and also,
thing.
Also on the tail end of the report is the single audit report, which is the testing of the federal programs. And that's a real compliance type test where the federal government says, based on the program, you have to test this, this, and this. They have no findings to report with that either. So that's significant.
All right. That's excellent. Any questions from the public? You have to identify yourself.
Okay, Emily Greenberg, Evans Park. Just a comment. You had said you mentioned that the food service showed a deficit this year. Is this the first year that we've had a deficit in food service?
No, there was one the prior year too. This year's was $99,000. The prior year was about $30,000.
Okay, I just wanted to
add. I think one thing jumps out from our analysis of other districts is that the majority of them are showing losses in the food service, so costs were going up faster than any price increases.
Okay. Just a comment. Many years ago, we had food service that was part of our staffing that we paid for, and we were losing about $200,000 a year, and the decision was made to farm it out, and many of our people were, we let go a significant number of people who lived in the township that worked for us in food. They were rehired by Skip and Maureen Cahill. I would hate to see our food service change because I think that they, over the years, they've done a really good job. But has anybody looked, are we looking into why the deficit, aside from, like what we can do to get them back into better figures?
This is Michaels and I were just talking about that. It's a great question, and we're going to take a look at it. We would like it to be neutral.
Yes, at the very least. But in the original time when they came, it was actually profitable. We were making money from it. So, and I realize it's a different era. I'm showing my age, but food is food. So hopefully we can come up with some ways of making it more attractive for the kids and pricing it realistically.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm.
And Nigel Blower, Elkins Park. As a financial layman, what I'm hearing from the audit is you don't have a concern around fraud issues, if everything looks okay. And is it right to say that you feel like this is a relatively healthy financial situation compared to what you see
The overall balance sheet is very solid as far as the debt-to-equity ratios and the size of the fund balance, so yes.
Is it in the scope of your work to kind of project out to see how that's going to, one of the things we're thinking about is the capital expenditures we're going to have in the next few years for the construction. And obviously you mentioned PISAs.
Right.
Do you look to over the next 10 years and see how healthy it's likely to be over that point in time?
No, to be honest, we're historians, I guess, is what we're checking on, but we don't go perspective. And we'll comment if the trend is negative, the general fund or the fund balance or some of the losses start popping up, but we're not project out into the...
You're not looking at the capital contributions, but no. Capital bond,
especially the easier bond part, too, for those things.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tuma Laban. I'm sorry, I'm Sherry Hazelwood, Glenside. Back with the school districts owe $24 billion?
Right now, the unfunded liability is about $24 billion.
I thought you said B.
Yeah, I did too. I wrote it down thinking, oh my God.
That's why I laid you asked that question. I just want to make sure we're talking billions.
That's where the school districts, the state has their own $20 billion.
That's what you said second week. But if we, let's just say it comes up to $150 million, let's just call it an even number. Is there then a plan that, or do we just have to give them $150 million?
No, it's just trying to highlight the unfunded liability.
Oh, okay. These so this never, is just a reassessment as to where they
but
are.
But these are each okay. year will come up with their own rates that they have to feel they have to charge to make the plan solid at some point.
Right. Exactly. Okay. My really ultimate question was: is this a document that in the past, and I don't know the answer because this is never anything I've looked at. This sounds like really great information, and it also shows how much we have actually planned over the years to help keep our district as well-funded and the changes that we've made in terms of our planning for our budget. Is this something that we put online? Do we put the audit online? Oh, okay.
Yes.
We do? Oh, okay. I didn't know. I've never looked for it. I thought maybe it was your opinion. Okay. Thank you. That's it. I just
wrote
it over went online.
Just related to that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
When we put it online, can we put a summary with it so that people who are laymen can understand it? Or can we put a summary with it?
We can.
So that when people are looking at the know and...
Yeah, like what you just said,
how positive it is.
Right up to the teasers and we owe all that money. I was really happy.
You know, the bake sale.
Yeah, big bake sale.
Very big cake.
Anyone else? All right. Oh, I saw you pointing, Mr. Nelson. Well, thank you very much for the presentation. It was good to hear all the positives. And like I said, we'll put those up on the website, too. So thank you.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. People know you're always
behind. Yeah, the money we hope to have. Ms. Mikes will now do the preliminary budget presentation for 2015-2016. As soon as Ms. Russell is finished. Ms. Russell, you used to get on me. The eyes are to get on you. Thank you, Ms. Russell. Go ahead, Ms. Michael.
Thank you, Mr. Roy.
And once again, let Ms. Michaels get through it and ask questions at the end. Thank you.
Okay, the purpose of this presentation is to inform the school board of the 2015-16 preliminary budget revenue and expenditure details. The preliminary budget was prepared with a tax increase at index, which equates to additional tax revenue of approximately $1.5 billion. The 0.83 increase in millage will impact the median household by $9.98 per month or $119.76 a year. This next slide represents or illustrates the impact on home assessments ranging from $100,000 to $200,000. Give you a little view of what the impact is. This is a snapshot of revenue comparison between the current year budget and the I'm going to move to the next slide to have some key talking points because this is a better visual. This illustrates that local revenue accounts for 83% of the total budget. Some of the budget drivers include a slight increase in assessment and an increase in our EIT collection, which is primarily due to the county tax collection initiative. Some of the variables which are changing that could impact revenues are assessment appeals dating back to 2007, which could have an impact on that slight increase in assessment that we saw for this year. And also that the state budget has not been released to date, so we do not know where our subsidies land. And that includes the homestead, farmstead exclusion calculation. And for those that do not know what that is the gaming money that we receive from the state when the casinos are put in. So that has not been certified. That will not be certified till May. So we do not know that number to date. And this slide just identifies the talking points that I just made. So moving on, this is a snapshot of an expenditure comparison between the current year budget and the proposed preliminary budget. Again, we're talking the difference between last year of $102,396,000 to $103,887,000. This is a snapshot of what our preliminary expenditures look like. I put in your package for the board so that you can identify what each of the series mean. I put the terms and definitions so that you understand when we're talking about 100 salaries, 200 benefits, so that you can follow along with that. As you will note, salaries and benefits account for 71% of the total budget. Some of the drivers include employee contractual obligations and the increase in PESERs. Some of the variables that affect expenditures are the BEC contract will expire June 30, 2015, special education initiatives that are being looked at, and ongoing projections for capital costs. The next slide identifies these talking points that I just spoke of. Some of the key budget dates that we have coming up, February 10, 2015, which is the legislative meeting, is the adoption of the 2015-16 preliminary budget. March 3, 2015 and April 7, 2015 are school board budget planning sessions. May 5, 2015 is a budget hearing, and June 9, 2015 is the adoption of the final budget. So at this point, the recommendation that the administration is making is the adoption of the preliminary budget for the 2015-16 at the February 10th, 2015 legislative meeting.
Okay, thank you. We'd like to start with any questions from board members. Starting with Mr. Nelson.
Massive drop-off in state funding. I know that that wasn't just PlanCon being one-time problem. I gotta imagine that, especially with PESERs, I assume PESERs contributions are part of that state funding. What's the drop-off?
Okay, so here's the explanation of this because it relates to the increase of $4.7 million that you see in local.
Yeah.
When I talked about the homestead-farmstead exclusion, that gets calculated into the overall taxes and the tax collection until it is certified. So what will happen is once it's certified in May, that money will then be reallocated down into the state line item, and that will then increase the state allocations. The net of the 1.6 and why, because normally the range is about $3 million is our homestead exclusions. Why it's netted at 1.6 is because the two state subsidies that I was able to adjust, because they adjust with wages, are PESERs and Social Security, because the state reimburses us half of our wage costs. So I was able to increase those two state subsidies, and then the net that you see or the decrease that you see is going to be offset by the homestead exclusion. So that'll balance out.
And then what is the other?
The other that was budgeted for 2014-15 was us using reserves for PESERs. At this point, I have not recognized that or pulled those funds. That will be done at year end, depending on collections and where expenditures fall.
And so we then have, therefore, have non-budgeted for next year.
That is correct.
Counselor Restrainer.
I had a question on the table about expenditures.
You have
page number 8.
Page 8, okay. I have a question.
So on 500 and 800, what is that showing?
Okay, so the 500, which are other purchase service, includes costs, transportation costs, includes all your charter school and your tuition payments. So this decrease is based on the fact that I compared actual spend in previous years. The goal for this budget was to look at the trends in spending and start to allocate and budget or project those budget numbers based on spend and more realistic numbers. So basically that's a decrease in special education placements that were budgeted in previous years. And those some of those funds were reclassified into Object 300, which was went up about $1 million. And then the other one was 800.
800, other objects.
Okay, so 800 and 900 have to be kind of viewed together. What happened here is in the past, our entire debt service payment was budgeted in the 800 objects. Mm-hmm. For PDE purposes and classification purposes, our debt payment is split between interest and principal. Interest is recorded in the 800 series. Principal is recorded in the 900 series. So what you're seeing there is a reclassification or recoding of actual payments for debt service. So the 800s reflect the accurate number of our interest payment for debt, and the 900 series reflect what our principal piece is.
So you essentially segregated those two things.
Yes.
In between 800 and 900.
Yes.
And that's the movement there.
Yes.
For just to follow up on this, so for this past year, interest and principal was in 800.
Yes.
Okay.
Now it's split between 8 and 9.
For the coming year.
Yes.
15, 16. Okay. Questions on my left side of the room? Everybody seems pretty absorbed in the numbers. Any questions or what you're thinking about when we go to the public?
Good. Yeah, Nigel Blower, Elkins Park. If this assumes a 1.9% increase over last year, what are the top two or three drivers for why picking that number to increase the budget?
The drivers on the expense side were our contractual obligations, including teasers, and then the ongoing projection of the capital expenditures. That's a big driver.
Thank you.
And even though it's listed under variables, because it's ongoing and that information is still forthcoming, it's still variable, but it's a big driver.
Thank you.
Well, I'll just start Ms. Hawkins first, then we'll go to Ms. Hager.
Thank you, Ms. Michaels. As always, somehow I managed to understand your funding deficiencies, generally speaking, not financially astute. I'm wondering whether or not the process of when we had that budget planning session and we talked about cost savings and places where we could capture cost savings in an attempt to have kind of budget neutral budgeting. I don't necessarily see that, especially with you having just explained where we are achieving cost savings in, for instance, other purchase services, right? Decrease in special education and some reclassification, right? That's not what we talked about. Or that other objects has really been shifted down to the 900 series. So did that process of trying to identify ways in which we could capture cost savings through the kind of budget process get reflected in this document yet?
It has not been. To kind of remind everybody, the process that happened was there was a list of items that has been looked at for the last 2 years and incorporated into workshops. And also, I know the board retreat slash workshop 2 years ago. There were numbers that were identified with that. I think with the ongoing capital expenditures that we're facing right now, we need to look at that kind of in a vacuum, because some of those cost-saving mechanisms, the big items, were a fundamental shift in how we operate on a day-to-day. It was talking about staffing and personnel
and changing in, you know, departmental, the way that departments run. So I think with the capital expenditure piece, that was not reflective in this preliminary budget. Moving forward, we get at the planning meetings that are planned those 2 months, we can certainly revisit those and have those discussions. But at this point, no, those items were not reflective in there. And again, it's a discussion on the last 2 years, and I think with changes that have happened in our district, that some of those numbers have changed and some of the thought processes have changed as far as how departments and certain staffing levels are going. Going back to this slide, which I think is a, you know, it tells the tale. Why I'm kind of capturing staff is because you see the two big items that make up our expenses, and it's salaries and benefits. So when we're talking about capturing real savings, we're basically talking about staffing. I mean, you're not going to cut from supplies or anything else because they're, you know, the big pieces of this pie right now is salaries and benefits. So when those discussions do happen, we can revisit the list that was presented and the board did work on and have those discussions in those planning meetings.
Ms. Haywood and Mr.
Thank you very much, Ms. Nichols. In terms of the, I think you have the revenue variables, the assessment appeals,
or yes,
dating back to 2007, how many are we looking at that date back to 2007? Do we know what the, how to quantify that at this point?
The big one that we had mentioned at the last meeting is the Cheltenham Mall assessment appeal. And I think that's the one that would have the most impact on our assessment. And that's the main one that dates back to 2007. There are some others that come down the pipe, and we can provide an update to get you that information.
And that's going to be presumably a decrease in revenue, not an increase.
As a follow-up to that, the property, we were talking about getting a bump on property tax increase from the sale of, I think it was, was it Dominican Retreat?
The Towers is the one that I spoke of.
Okay, I thought it was the one that the sisters were involved. Okay.
That's in the process as well.
That's still in the process?
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Delgado?
Can you just kind of quickly highlight go over what, how much is built into this budget for facilities for next year?
Sure. Some of the drivers in the Object 300 are professional services. You see that it went up $1.1 million. Included in that number is $700,000 that has been dedicated into the support services budget under building improvements to address some of the major issues at Elkins Park. There's also in the 900 object series, part of that $4.1 million, there's a line item transfer to capital reserve. There's $600,000 that has been budgeted to transfer money from the general fund into the capital reserve.
So we're looking at roughly about $1.3 million of this budget going towards facilities?
Yes, capital projects.
Which is basically the increase?
Yes.
Any more board questions? Any questions from the public?
Just a question. The towers have been bought, and from what I understand, by a guy who lived in Cheltenham and his kids, I think, went here. He's done other major renovations and stuff in Jenkintown, and is doing very well. My hope is that he's going to really put a lot of effort into the towers to improve those buildings, which is a plus for the people who live there. And I understand some people have said that it's the first time they've seen good stuff happening there in quite a while. I hate to do this to them, but once they renovate, how do we get them back to the table for reassessment, for a higher reassessment of those properties once they're now doing that, you know, the building, he's put the money in, and how does the mechanism work in terms of reassessment
We work through our solicitor's office in the assessment appeals. We have the ability to appeal an assessment ourselves. So if that's the understanding, or we are aware that there are improvements being done, at especially large property or large taxing properties, okay, then we go through that process.
Okay, because I would just say just a heads up on that one. Okay.
Sorry,
I am Sherry. I'm still from Glenside.
Still?
For this one, I'll be from UPG. I just want to make sure that I've got this. This preliminary budget, okay, is personnel neutral. Basically, we're not hiring, firing. I mean, unless it's needed. I mean, in other words, this isn't assuming a 10% cut in anything personnel-wise. This is just neutral for personnel. And neutral for programs? Is that true?
Dr. Kiefer,
the quality of our educational programs remains the same. There's no reduction in the quality of our programs.
Okay, so we're not, I also know that this is a preliminary budget. I'm just asking, whether that's remaining, at least for all intents and purposes, neutral. Do we know, just out of curiosity, the percentage of teachers who are at their 35-year mark that might be, and whether that would affect the budget massively or not? We don't have any...
What was the question?
I know that sounds weird to ask that question,
no,
but
it's not, that's a good question.
It's not a weird question. But as you teachers get to the retirement point,
right,
you have other teachers coming up into those same retirement points, and you're bringing younger teachers on. That's a turnover of the veteran teachers and the inexperienced teachers. But we look at it every year. I know that the director of HR looks at those figures,
right,
but it's not as big a impact as people believe, because you're also raising other people to that higher salary level.
Okay, so I mean, in terms of benefits, though, that doesn't. I mean, the person who's there for 35 years has the same benefits as somebody who's there for 8 years. So that's then it doesn't mean anything. So I like neutral.
Go back on this side of the room.
Yeah, one more comment. I don't want to beat a dead dog, but does this reflect any possibility of department chairs being put back at the high school, or and any of the positions that have been eliminated being returned, and how do we squeeze that out of this budget somehow? I'm just putting the thought out there.
Thank you. We'll take a look at that. Okay. And the short time I've been here, I haven't looked at that.
Okay.
But this budget does not reflect
any changes.
So
this budget is still without an assistant superintendent and without.
This budget.
If you don't want
let me come back to that question as we build the budget.
Okay.
Over here.
Just want to make Byron Golden. Just want to make a comment. I'm very pleased that I have a lot of confidence that the expenditures from the budget are in good hands and they're being taken care of, thank God, finally. I'd just like to make a statement going a little bit ahead into the future. As you looked at the pie chart, you noticed one of your big cost items, of course, is salary. And I would just remind the board that when you enter into negotiations, you control salary until you sign the on the dotted line. So please keep that in mind when you are negotiating, that it's nice to enter into nice contracts, but they then obligate the board to significant increases. And I would ask you to please consider the possibility of instead of giving increases at the maximum salary step, which changes those numbers and a kind of compound from 1 year to the next, that you think in terms of longevity bonuses, which are one-time payments per year. They don't change the numbers, they don't compound. The teachers do get an increase, but the salary scale stays the same. And that the salary scale actually has built-in raises. It's not necessary to rewrite salary scales every contract. If you maintain the same salary scale that's in effect, say, in 15, 16, teachers move up the scale and get their annual increases, and with a longevity bonus, the teachers at max can also get an increase. And yet, I think that that's affordable for the district. So I just ask you to please keep that in mind, because boards tend to lose control of the budget when they negotiate the teachers' when they negotiate the contracts, and then after the fact, they say, well, we have these increases built into the budget, but the board agreed to them. So it's not up for this year, just something to think about for the future, that salary costs must be controlled if you're going to control your budget, as you know, federal obvious. And there are ways to do that while still giving teachers adequate and employees adequate increases and adequate compensation. So thank you.
Thank you. Getting back to Hazelwood, your question, where you could save money, let's say three people were at the top of the scale and they retired and we didn't fill those positions because we found we could get by without, that's where you would save fairly substantial amount of money, where if you didn't replace those positions.
Sure.
But I mean, I just wanted to follow up on your
I guess I gathered that, you know, when somebody who left that was at the top of the pay scale, that would make a big difference in terms of it. And I understand it makes a difference, but it's not the monumental difference that I was hoping it would make. But there you go.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Oh, Mr. Nelson. Real quick question. You mentioned that there's $700,000 for EP stuff in the operating budget. Do we have a general rule of thumb as to when we would look to the operating budget for building and maintenance items as opposed to the capital projects?
Well, I think with the plans that are in place to utilize the capital reserve fund to offset some of the borrowings that we are going to need to do in the future, depending upon Cedar Brook and EP, what we're looking to do, and we did this starting with Dr. Bobby's three-year plan. We started talking about, instead of using the bond fund, that we're going to start drawing into the capital reserve and build money into the general fund budget. So that plan was already in motion at the beginning of the school year to start looking at the general fund to start offsetting some of those costs. And looking at his three-year plan, there were some areas that were identified to use capital reserve and the general fund to pay for those. And what we've done, in essence, is shift those to the general fund because of the plans to use capital reserve for the Cedar Brook project.
Is there a timetable for when we would commit to the projects that make up that $700,000 for EP, such that if it were something that if we were... I mean, the board, obviously, in our Cedar Brook conversations, has also had conversations on what to do with Elton Park. If we were thinking of a 4 years down the line, 5 years down the line, we need to do something with Elton Park, that $700,000 that we would, this isn't debt service on stuff, we're going to expense it outright, perhaps we would choose not to do that. Is there a period where we need to kind of come up with a, are we doing this or aren't we doing this for whatever? I don't even know what that $700,000
I think the discussion is going to center around when information comes out about EP and what the plan is to address some of the issues at EP. So,
one of the things that we do know based on my conversations with Dr. Bobby is we are going to have to put some money in the Elkins Park School, even in the short term, because we have some HVAC issues. We want to do some asbestos removal. Even no matter what we would do with the Elkins Park, we would still incur those expenses. And what it would do is it would improve the appearance of the school interior. So we're taking a look at all those issues, but we are going to have to put some money into that building.
Dr. Blower, Elkins Park. Just one procedural question. So, if this meeting approves preliminary budget, to these other discussions around Elkins Park and the better understanding of Cedarbrook, those financial projections, do we understand those before the finalization of this budget in the middle of the year?
We've got those in for, did we go into money for the improvements with that?
They've already been built into this budget. The improvements for Elkins Park. We have an estimate of what we think we need to put into it.
And Cedarbrook would be objective.
This is only short term. This is not a major capital.
I guess it's improving. Yeah, I guess what I'm thinking is over the next, say, 5 years, there's going to be significant costs associated with those and PISAs and everything else, right? So if we looked at a 5-year plan and said, oh my God, this is what it looks like in 5 years, do we actually need to do something more drastic now to prepare for it? It would be better to know that before we approve this budget. I guess that's what I'm thinking.
The answer is no. We know that even if we started a major project with Elkins Park tomorrow, we would still have to do these things to improve Elkins Park. We have a boiler issue, we have some roofing issues. The fire alarm, exactly. We know we have to do those things, so it wouldn't change that. So you would say, well, would we take it out 5 years and not do anything because we're going to do something? The answer is no. We have to do those things.
Well, no, I don't want to kill this. I'm just thinking, I completely understand some of that is non-discretionary. We have to do it to maintain the building.
Yeah.
But you can't, there's only so much you can increase the budget each year, right? So there might be a trade-off of saying, we have to do this and therefore we can't do something else. And how soon do you get to understand that decision before we commit to this budget, I guess is what I'm trying to understand.
The feasibility, theoretically, would be done by the 3rd. Again, we would be, the process, as was mentioned, we'd be approving the adoption of the preliminary. The final budget wouldn't be adopted until, is that in May, June?
So May, as then you have the 5-year adoption.
So we'll be further along in whatever process it is, including having a district-wide, where are we from a feasibility
standpoint? Thank
you.
I think Ms. Russell had a question.
No, I was there. I thought the point was, in part, that maybe we need to be building in more money rather than taking out the $700,000, maybe we ought to be setting aside more for future
business. Well, you have to make at some point down the road, we're probably going to have some really hard decisions on what we can spend on facilities versus programs versus people, right? There's no magic in the numbers. If they have the earlier we understand those really hard decisions, we might have to start making some of those hard decisions earlier rather than having a huge step change 3 years out that says, oh my God, at this point we've got to cut a whole program to pay for something.
Strategic plan.
Well, great.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay.
I just would like to put PISAs into some perspective. In terms of the annual contract, in terms of the annual increase in the budget, what is the actual impact of the PISAs increases? Of rough dollars.
Well, in this budget, it was it was around $1 million.
And then half of that comes out of fund balance?
Half of it would then be reimbursed by the state, but that gets built in on the revenue side. We did not build in anything for reserves to use in this year's budget.
Okay. So in other words, PISA goes up about $2 million. $1 million comes back from the state. So the actual increase, the annual increase in our budget is approximately $1 million, give or take. And then we've generally been taking, well, we haven't done it yet, but in the past they've been taking $500,000 out of the fund balance to help defray that cost. So the actual impact of PISAs is about approximately $500,000. That's increase, because we hear so much about PISAs is killing the budget. PISAs is a problem, no question, but it isn't where our real problem is. In terms of the annual increase, it's not the big killer of the budget. That's all. Some people are under the impression that PISAs is such a major impact on the budget increases, and it's not. That's all. I just wanted to put it in perspective.
I think we had a question from Ms. Hayden.
Yeah,
Just wanted to clarify, the $700,000 that we talked about for EP, that's for projected repairs to sustain EP for what period of time? We're not talking about $700,000 that we plan to be using for EP over the next year, is it?
There were areas that were identified in the three-year plan, and two major ones was the transformer and the fire alarm system. So either one of those projects could be identified and done with that money that was built in. So,
So that is built into the budget for next year. Should we need to do either or?
Either or.
So clearly I'm talking about both would be more than $70,000, right, and both need to be done at some point.
Any other questions? All right, we've Ms. Michaels will give us a short presentation on what's going on this year, right, which I think is real important.
Okay, the purpose of this presentation is to provide an informational update on the current status of the 14-15 budget. So, a lot of information on this slide, but I'm just going to highlight that our total revenue collection to date is about $89.5 million, or about 87.39%. Of our budget, and on the expenditure side, we're at about $51.8 million, which equates to about 50.56% of our budget. So at this time, we are actually on target for our revenues and expenditures compared to our budget projections.
I guess we go back to that slide, and I'll start on the left side to say,
I just want to say thank you. Yeah. Honestly.
We thought this was important.
Yes. I mean, I think I ask a lot of questions about the financials probably every time we get them. And it's really nice to see this in one page with a summary statement, because I never know, or I feel like I never know, from one point in time of the year to the end, are we close to projection on revenues and expenses? Are we over, under? Particularly when you see the categories that are 107% and some that are 2%. So this puts it in real stark perspective. So thank you so much for doing this.
Did you want to ask a question? Just
no.
Want a third? Okay.
Simon.
Right here. Ms. Greck.
The state and federal revenues. Are we likely to, are you expecting, it looks like we're like tipping the state halfway there. Is it likely we're going to
lose that?
Yeah.
Yes. The way that the subsidies come in into the district is not monthly. Mm-hmm. So a big one is our PEASERS. PEASERS comes in quarterly. So that's obviously a big hit in each quarter. So I think two quarters are recognized here. There's going to be two more as well. So Social Security and PEASERS, and Social Security comes each month. The other big subsidies that we have for state are special ed. We're still waiting on a special ed subsidy. Our basic ed subsidy has not been fully realized yet either. So, like I said, they come in chunks. So you'll see at the end of the quarter, you'll see spikes in the state.
Thank you.
Quick question on other, is that grants or what is that?
Yes, the other is the money that was built in from fund balance from the previous years to offset some of our PEASERS costs. I identified this in the preliminary budget.
So you haven't used
it? I have not recognized it yet.
No. Okay.
That'll be at towards the end if we need to pull that one.
Okay. Ms. Hoffman.
Again, this is wonderful. I'm curious about the unanticipated property cost in about $500,000. I remember Dr. Bobby talking about acquiring trucks, but that's the only property. I can't imagine we spent $500,000. Maybe we did spend $500,000 on trucks, but I mean, this was obviously unanticipated in the budget, and so I'm curious what that expenditure represents.
There's two things that make up that money. The one is, you're right on point, it is the purchases that Dr. Bobby made with savings from a project that happened. So those were not budgeted. They were not anticipated. So that will be pulled from the budgetary reserve money that got built into our budget, which is in the 900 series. So that just needs to be reclassed from the budget up into that line item to offset that. The other piece of it was we revamped the usage of IDA funds, which is special ed funding. This year, Mr. Knoll, Ms. Cavalier, and I worked together, and as well as Mr. Brown, to look at replacing the special ed technology. So originally that money was budgeted for IDA funds in the 300 levels, and it got pushed back down into the 700 levels based on just a programmatic decision. Because the property is also computers, any tech equipment outside of bigger purchases such as vehicles.
So we will see a comparable offset in the 300 series for that expenditure. So it's going to be
for a piece of it. Yes. What will happen is it'll be a budget transfer. So you get budget transfers each month. There will be a budget transfer from the 300 series into the 7, and there will also be a budget transfer from the 900 series into the 7.
Okay. So that will
happen. Yes.
Chris Nelson.
Similar to this, the question on state and federal funds, local funds are what's probably more concerning for me. I assume we're now at the point where we're starting to collect all the delinquent taxes. I think delinquency starts in December. One, are we generally on track at 97.5%, 98%? And two, this is now where we're also realizing both increased fees or interest that we're charging, as well as somebody else now has their hand in our pocket, whether it be the county or our county.
Delinquent. Right now, the reason that spiked, there's two things driving that. One is absolutely we're going to recognize our local revenues a lot faster than our other ones because of the timing of when taxes are due. So by the end of December, tax payments have to be in, so our collection rate is bounced up. There's two things that hit in the local that were almost one-time shots. Well, actually, the one's not a one-time shot, but I identified this for 15-16, that our EIT collections are slightly elevated. The other piece was that we've had some property sales. So our real estate transfer tax has realized pretty much a one-time with a big property sale. In December, the Cheltenham Mall sold, so that was one of the big drivers for the real estate transfer tax.
So then this is actually higher than usual?
Yes, because of those items.
Any other board questions? I will go to the public.
Hi, Sherry. My daughter's at the high school.
It's a long meeting.
No, it's very similar.
She was in elementary when we
put me in some box. And anyway, also want to know is whether you will post both these presentations. Thank you for what you do. I'm still very confused, and nobody has been able to answer this for me. What happened when we go to PlanCon, is any of that money ever going to come back to us, or is it just lost in?
You just want to get an answer to that question. Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, I can answer that, and it's not reflective here. PlanCon money is in the state line item right now because of other subsidies hasn't come in, but this year they released our PlanCon money. We actually had a hit of over $1 million for reimbursements for PlanCon. That's reflective in that state.
Which school is that?
It was.
Which one? Shoemaker. Shoemaker. It was the 2010 class. And is there any chance of getting the other one done or not? Or is that just like somewhere?
Right now, we've been receiving our reimbursements and we've been submitting them. So as far as news.
Okay, so that's good news, right?
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. We love that. Okay, good. Thanks.
Yeah.
Emily Greenberg, Elkhurst Park. When we get the one-time hit, let's say, of the Cheltenham Mall,
where do those monies go? That they just, what do we do with them? And some of them they put in capital. Can we divide that up?
New cars for the blue cars.
What'll happen is,
aside from our own pockets. You know, okay.
What'll happen is at the end of the year we have the discussions about our fund balance. So if you have the increase in revenue that you weren't expecting, obviously you're going to have a surplus, unless your expenditures over exceed what you expected. Once there's a surplus, and I think the board went through this with our last audit, then decisions are made on where we assign that money, where we commit it, and what we decide to, where we decide to put those surpluses.
I just want to say, I know you all know this, when it's a one-time shot and you know you're not going to get it the next year, just be real cautious, guys. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe still hire a bunch of teachers.
Or be sure that you got ongoing other monies that are going to. One-shot deals are very tempting, but that's what I was thinking. If we could stick them in capital, where you know, where someplace where we know that it we need it anyway, but it's not going to cause annual. Just a
good point. It looks like I don't see any hands up, so I wanted to
just a quick note.
Oh, I'm sorry.
This slide, this presentation, will become a part of our monthly meetings, so you'll see this.
On that note, I'd like to thank Ms. Michaels again. I'd like to thank the board, the public, for all the terrific questions. Certainly kept me interested. And So I'd like to make a motion to adjourn.
No, you can't.
All in favor?
Aye. This concludes this school board recording. This recording is copyright by KD3HW and is released for free distribution under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivations 3.0 United States license. Podcast sounds courtesy of freesound.org. See the acknowledgement page of the podcast website. Thank you for downloading us and have a great day.